Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglin from the Annex Gallery in the heart of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia, in the middle of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles. I'm Dean Haglin. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Phil Lernes, ladies and gentlemen.
It is so exciting to be here a few weeks after your big gallery opening.
Oh, my big gallery opening. Wasn't that incredible? How much fun that was June 9th. fun we had.
We have guests today. It's a very special installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Absolutely. We have our director from Norway, Mr. Stig Svensson, is here. Hi, Stig.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty damn good.
Excellent.
And alongside Stig, beautiful actress Tamina Sunny, who stars in Stig's film Elevator.
Elevator. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
Excellent.
She's really not. She's got the most enormous bandage I've ever seen.
She yes. looks wonderful, though.
She walked in talking about having sliced through tendons.
Ah, I know.
And
did that hurt?
It absolutely killed.
And how many stitches did
it
get?
Killed? You mean the audience loved it?
Oh, it was riveted. I have 7 stitches.
7? That's
first
lucky.
7 stitches in my whole life.
Oh, you've never injured yourself till now?
No.
That's incredible.
Pretty damn lucky, I guess.
That is really lucky. I got, I don't know.
The show is still young.
Yeah, I have 22 stitches in the side of my head from when a mirror fell off the studio wall and nearly cut my major artery after a play I did called You Put Your Eye Out. How ironic.
Are you
moody? No, I'm not.
Tamina, see stitches? That's the first thing that you two have in common. I told you I'm going to be making a checklist throughout the show. There are many things that you have in common. To start the conversation that has already begun.
Excellent.
What's very exciting about having Stig here is that we've had other filmmakers on the show, of course.
We have.
I do not believe in the more than 4 years we've been doing this show every week that we have ever had a filmmaker who began his career in a country outside the United States.
That's right.
Your first feature film was, of course, called Radio Pirates.
Yep.
And it was made in your home country of Norway.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was, it's always hard to make a film, but it's awesome. It's a children's film.
Uh-huh.
And working with children, and we had children and animals and all the things you're not supposed to have in a film.
Fantastic.
So it was quite the interesting experience.
Now, how is it making a film in Norway? Are you government funded?
Yeah,
is there
it's
a big...
all state funded.
It
no,
is.
It's not all state funded because the last couple of years we had more and more of a kind of like an independent, private funded, lots of independent film coming out.
Well, in the last decade, there really was this... what was actually called, I kid you not, I'm not making this up. It's so cheesy that you would think I'm making it up. But at film festivals in this country, there would be spotlight on the Norwave of independent cinema is what they would call it.
They call it the Norwave?
Absolutely.
Stig,
and
are
I'm
you
fascinated.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I'm fascinated by this because, although I have never been there, my father's entire ancestry is from Norway.
Oh, really?
And mine's so it's from Sweden.
Nobody cares.
Basically, nope. Probably related.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. I can trace mine back to Eric the 14th, King of Sweden from 1570, the schizophrenic king.
That's royalty.
Yeah.
The Haglunds left Norway to move to Sweden,
yeah.
thereby increasing the average.
Yeah, we were kicked out. No, we were the illegitimate offspring. He banged the stablemaid. And my God.
Look, all I know is that when your clan... went to Sweden, you know, split off from Norway and went to Sweden, it raised the average IQ of both countries.
Great.
See what I did?
Wait a second.
So is there a what you could call a thriving film community in Norway?
I would say so. It definitely is. We had, there was this Nazi zombie film called Dead Snow.
Dead Snow.
Yeah,
Dead
and...
Snow.
It's
my favorite Nazi zombie movie.
Exactly. It's a pretty cool concept. And actually, one of the producers on this film is the producer on Dead Snow.
Oh. Yeah. On Elevator.
Yeah, on Elevator. Definitely. You have Troll Hunters now out last year.
What's Troll Hunters?
Well, it was sold... It's the biggest selling film. It was sold like 60 countries.
You're kidding.
No, it was huge. I actually went to breakfast this morning and we saw a Trollhunter poster on the little diner we went to.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. And is it about a guy who hunts trolls?
Yeah.
And is it like a horror movie?
It's like a mockumentary in a way.
Oh.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Oh,
what?
How do I see that?
I don't
know. How do I get a hold of Norwegian films?
There's a lot of, but it's a lot of good stuff happening in the film industry in Norway. Of course, there's a lot of bad stuff too. Once you get the state funding, because they have to fulfill certain criteria.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So many female directors.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
That
yeah.
Kind
yeah.
Of thing.
Yeah. But I would say that. The most interesting thing is happening on the independent scene in Norway right now.
And what is there any way to characterize what a Norwegian independent film might be versus, say, an independent film from Finland or from Sweden? I mean, is there any kind of national identity or characteristic towards the independent
There's
film movement?
There's a lot of sauna in films.
There's a lot of what?
Saunas in films from Finland. But I'm not sure, because there is the weird thing about Scandinavia is that...
What is the weird thing about Scandinavia? I've been trying to put my finger on this.
It's almost up at the North Pole, so people shouldn't live there. That's far... I would say that Scandinavia is the film market is kind of, Norwegian films doesn't play well in Sweden.
Interesting.
Oh. And Swedish films, you have a couple that plays really well, but the majority just flops in Norway.
And wow. Why
Danish films, you have the von Trier's, of course.
Right.
I don't know.
Because so in other words, at least in answering my question, there must be some uniqueness, because clearly there's something that's not crossing that very near border.
Surely Let the Right One In.
That's a fantastic masterpiece.
Film. Did that play well in Norway?
Yeah, that was huge in Norway. Yeah.
Because that was excellent.
There is a tradition that Swedish films plays a lot better in Norway, and Danish films plays a lot better in Norway, but Norwegian films haven't been able to reach a broad audience in the other Scandinavian countries.
Interesting.
That's so bizarre.
Well, we made a lot of bad films.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, how many films have you made? Other than Pirates and Elevator.
Pirate
this
Radio
is my
was
second feature film.
This is your second feature film.
But I made
film.
Some short films. And
some short films.
And I understand that those were of kind of the suspense genre. Is that true?
The short films?
The short films.
I don't know.
No?
Well, that is suspenseful.
Because you've made a suspense film now.
Yeah.
Okay. So was that, a desire to try something new, or is that because you'd been honing those skills?
I was watching a lot of Hitchcock films when I grew up.
Oh.
So it's probably that interest of wanting to do a thriller.
Right.
Definitely. So, and it's always, for me, it's the script.
Yeah.
If the script is cool, it doesn't matter what kind of genre, if it's sci-fi or comedy or...
Right.
If the script is good...
Then you're set.
Yeah.
Are you writing your own scripts?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And had you gone to film school then and done all that screenwriting?
I went to film school in Oslo for 2 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and basically I was working on a short film called Loose Ends. Yeah, it was screened on a lot of festivals all over the world, and it was about two guys who had just seen the latest Star Wars film, Episode 1, and they were arguing about...
Sure, I know this.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Whether E.T. belongs in the Star Wars universe or not.
And this was a short.
Yeah.
And, I swear that we've been at a festival where this was
It
playing.
Was in Aspen, among others.
Okay.
Yeah. But what about London Sci-Fi?
It might have been.
I think I saw it there, actually, in London.
It was screened in a lot of festivals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I know your work then.
So, but my producer in that short film, she was celebrating her 50th birthday, and I was attending the party, and I was talking to another director, and he had made two or three feature films, and I was talking to him, we were a little bit drunk, and I was asking, how do I get my feature film going? And he said, if you're going to get your feature film going in Norway, you have to write it yourself.
Oh.
Yeah, so I started to write scripts. It's, basically learning how to write a feature film script.
Yeah.
But, of course, that didn't happen because I haven't written any of my feature films. So he was wrong.
So we stopped right there.
Yeah.
Well, even here, I think it's still true that half of all first-time directors write their own film.
But it's a really good... To be able to write your own script is really good in learning how to, to make a movie, because you learn how to,
structure it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
And then you can also learn, then when you read other people's scripts, then it's just like, oh, well, page 7, I wouldn't have read that.
Well, and also you'll be a lot more respectful, because you know how much work it is to write a script. It is really hard, and writing a script, you spend a year or 2 years on it,
and
I would never, I admire Mark that, that will give me the opportunity to direct his script, because I would never be able to give my script to another director.
As we let Stig lean a little closer to the microphone
while
he's talking, I'll point out that that's Mark Rosenberg,
Mark Rosenberg, the
writer and producer of Elevator.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So how did then you two connect?
Yeah, I'm interested. Tamino, at what point does a call come hey, Norwegian filmmaker, going to work in the English language here in America, first time. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, this process happened a little different to normal casting situations. Where I was sent the script through, and I was asked to read it, and what I thought about it, and whether I'd like to meet the director and producer. I read it in one sitting, because usually, when you get a script through and you're reading on your laptop, it's like, oh.
Oh, dear Lord.
Is this what it's come to?
Going back to the old sort of paper and flicking it through and writing notes, there's something quite valuable about that.
But right.
Saving the old trees and everything.
Right.
It's all electronic. Anyway, so I read this script through and I was just like, wow, this is good. So I got straight onto the phone to my agent, and I was like, I'd love to meet them. And I was like, when? She went, tomorrow morning, it's already been set.
What?
And I was like, okay, great.
What if I hated it? What if I do then? Yeah.
So I met Mark and Stig, and we spoke about the character, and we're all on the same page, which I thought was great, because, I guess if you had, conflicting views, then it'd be like, maybe this person's not seeing how we see the character.
Right.
But it just all, it seemed to work. It was like a little jigsaw puzzle fitting together. And I was really excited when I left the meeting, because when you just have this feeling.
Yeah, exactly. The vibe going.
That was
and then,
cool.
Oh, yeah, you had to be nervous when you found out that that Stig grew up watching Alfred Hitchcock films, because Hitchcock wanted to treat actors like cattle, and we have no idea how Norwegians treat their cattle.
Yeah, yeah. You try to treat them like cattle?
Blew up in my face after about 10 minutes.
Well, how many actors did you meet for this movie? And did you have all these breakfasts all set up before?
It was, a different casting process, the whole thing, because basically me and Mark did all the casting ourselves.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You didn't take a casting director?
No, we didn't have a casting director on this film, because it's such a low-budget film.
Wow.
But, when you see the film, it doesn't look like. With the ensemble we have and the actors, it's really high-quality cast.
Well, you might have a new career for yourself. I actually, in my second independent film that I had directed, somebody approached wanting the contact to the casting director because they wanted to hire the casting director having seen my film, and I got to say, well, how much will you pay me? Because you're talking to him.
Yeah.
So how did you know she existed in Los Angeles?
Was it through your manager, I think?
I think it was through Julia.
Yeah, that's right. Through Julia Buckle.
Well, why don't you describe a little bit the character that you were trying to cast and how that character fits into the story of Elevator?
Well, Tamina plays a reporter, Maureen Asano, who is a celebrity in the New York news scene. Uh-huh. And she had to be beautiful.
Right.
She is.
Check.
Check. Intelligent.
Check.
Check. Funny. Check. But we were looking.
Has to be able to open champagne bottles without injuring yourself. Yeah. Well, we'll fix that in post.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a tough one. No, it's basically a lot of that when it comes to casting. It's that gut feeling when you meet someone.
Yeah.
And I think when we met Tamina, she had that. That right feeling, that right aura about her, that she got the character. Of course, she loved the script. Maybe she was lying, but I think she did. And it's just that, you feel that you're connecting in a weird... It's that first instant meeting, and
don't we always hope that we will see the character the moment they walk into
exactly.
the room.
Exactly, and you always look for that thing that you feel, okay, this is someone I can work with. She gets the part. She's a cool person, and you know, someone who you would like to explore the universe and the character with.
Right,
together.
Right,
and.
Now, were there any examples where that didn't work out with other actors? Did anybody come in? Did you have a trouble casting any role?
You know, it's that there. We met a lot of actors, but you know, it's always that one guy who walks in and you see him and you think, whoa, okay, that's him. We had Michael McCurry, who's playing the bomb maker in the film. He was actually auditioning for a different part.
Oh.
For Don, who is...
What we keep moving away from is... Why, Tamino, why don't you tell us what the story of Elevator is?
Oh, that's what you want to hear.
Oh, that's what you want.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I wanted to hear why I didn't get cast.
Yeah, which actors did you not? Yeah.
How did this...
Yeah, by the way, getting cast in the film, not something you and Tamina have in common.
Oh, man.
But Tamina, people probably remember her from Children of Men, and you saw Children of Men,
so that's something.
We both love Children of Men,
yes,
right?
We did.
One of our favorites.
But
Tamina, tell us the story of Elevator, if you will.
So it's interesting because we get to it's a psychological thriller, and okay, we all get trapped in an elevator, and there's a bomb. But they're just the circumstances. It's more about the interrelationships between all the people, how they try and survive. We all start at a point, and we all have a journey. We all have an arc. We all get somewhere at the end of the film, and it's just gets messy, very messy.
I love that the little IMDb tag summary of the film is racism collides with corporate greed when 9 strangers are trapped in a Wall Street elevator and one of them has a bomb. They will do anything to survive. Or as I like to call it, Monday morning in New York.
Happens all the time. That's right.
And of course, as you know, there's no place on earth I feel more at home than New York. That's so right. I don't mean that as a negative.
No,
that's... Let me fight for my own survival against corporate greed and racism.
Whole thing in the elevator? It's like hours and hours of 9 actors in an elevator?
Days and days.
Days and days.
Now, we shot the film for 13 days, the whole thing.
It was intimate.
I would say so.
The elevator was built in the Panavision Studios. The stage up in Woodland Hills, and it was the elevator set was really clever constructed and designed, so you could take out panels, remove walls, so you could basically put the camera in every wanted position.
Right.
Yeah, and we.
Because that's always the danger, right? Repeating shots and repeating angles.
Yeah. So when we planned, I storyboard myself, so we storyboarded the entire film, and me and Alan Betancourt, the DP, we set, you have to set certain rules, because you can go absolutely crazy with angles, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And just put the camera anywhere, so we kind of wanted to hold back.
Oh.
So we didn't want to, you know, try
in
not... Exactly, yeah. Not be too fancy and not too flashy. I think when I see the film... I think it has kind of a old-fashioned feel to it, in a way.
Oh, like Rope, the way it was just sort of that one...
Yeah, it's not that long takes, as in Rope, but it's still, the camera is pretty locked off.
Yeah.
And once we go handheld, there's a reason for it. And when we push in, there's a reason for it. So we don't... There's not a lot of flashy movements and you know, crazy angle. It's... You know, you use the camera for a purpose.
Right.
Which I think is really efficient.
I always think in any film that's kind of in a locked box, you know, you can think of horror suspense films like Cube or war films like Das Boot.
Yeah.
One of the real pitfalls that it's really important to navigate around is when do you start going in close?
Yeah.
Because that's going to create greater and greater claustrophobia. Mm. And it's a powerful card to play. Mm. You have to be really careful when to play it, because if you start going in closer too soon,
you won't hold
back. There's no going back.
Right.
And I think the film looks plays a lot better on the big screen, because then you get, I think you really, we're pretty close on some, you know, I hope you get the feeling that you're in the elevator with these characters.
Right. Or any time are you taking the place of a character? Does the camera sit in the crowd?
There's a couple of, we use Tamina's character, she's a journalist, so she starts to stream with her iPhone.
Ah, right.
So you get like an iPhone view.
Streaming.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Streaming real time.
But the cool thing, she was filming with her iPhone, and the footage she did was so good, so we actually
steady hand, you see.
Is that right?
Before
not anymore.
She
not anymore.
But it was, we put it in the offline and it played out pretty good.
Oh really? So you actually you can be credited as a camera person.
There you go.
Too.
I know. I like this.
But we didn't use it in the film.
Wow. As far as you know. Yeah.
You're not gonna make some money.
Well, Tamina, you said that it was very intimate, and as opposed to claustrophobic or any of these things. And I would think that that's a real gift, because I so often, I mean, I always hope when I go to a film that what I'm going to get to experience is intimacy with the characters, with the world that they live in. And I think more and more often, especially in this country, big budget filmmaking almost seems to be made to prevent intimacy of any kind with the characters, with the story, and with each other in the audience.
I think we were really blessed that as a whole cast, we all got on. And so when there were in between takes, we were just standing within the elevator, there was a lot of banter. There was a lot of getting to know each other. There was a lot of storytelling.
Right.
And so that was always a great feeling of like, yeah, this is good. You know, I'm enjoying it. This is kind of social as well.
Right.
And then Stig says, and action, and you get into the zone. And so in terms of that, it wasn't like, oh my God, this is like the worst feeling. There's always somebody cracking a joke.
Right, right.
So it's the you place laugh. To be.
It's it was. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh, that's
surviving.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you. Why do these? I mean, part of it is because they've overcome fear and death. But I think part of the reason that people who serve together in the armed forces and face combat together become, even though it might just be for a few months or a few weeks, they become lifelong friends, because when you're side by side in the trenches,
that
shared all the
experience.
Time,
yeah.
That shared experience,
absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. What was the biggest challenge then about that kind of shooting circumstance?
I mean, it was a short shooting schedule, so it was very full on, and so that kind of made it. You know, there were times where it was a little bit stressful, because we had some huge, huge, powerful, dramatic scenes and. That's when sometimes you need some space, but you don't have that space.
Right.
So all of a sudden, the realism sets in, and it's like, oh my God, like I really need out of this right now, but you can't. So then that settles in your character even more, and you're really living it. You're living through what's actually going on.
Wow.
So then, Stig, having been a student of Alfred Hitchcock, were you ever aware of that discomfort and then manipulating it and using it to heighten?
We shot the film in continuity.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
wow.
Because I think it helped us getting through the script, because we had such a clear goal.
Yeah.
So we knew that. We just had to eat pages.
Right,
every
right.
Day. But it also helps that after 10 days, you're pretty sick of that elevator.
Yeah.
So, I think it. Hopefully, it shows on the screen that you get a certain tension on the screen because of that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And you said you did the storyboards. Well, then that must have been fairly easy. I mean, it's a square, and then here's two people talking. Here's two people
exactly.
talking. It was a fairly easy storyboard.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now your background is in cartooning, isn't it?
Yeah. In 1995 to 1997, I went to the Joe Kuber School of Cartoon
in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
It was pretty awesome.
Who was your teachers there?
We had
was it Dave DeVries? Was he or no? He was
Mike Sellers.
Mike Sellers,
What's his name? DeMolder, Kim DeMolder.
Kim DeMolder. I'm not.
Joe Kubert is teaching too, of course.
Right, right.
Yeah, and Sergio Carello and.
And did you draw for DC or anything after?
Never. I it's a 3-year course.
Right. Oh, you dropped out?
No. Yeah, I was. It's pretty expensive though, going to schools in the U.S. So I was going for 2 years. It was, all we did was draw. basically.
Yeah.
For like 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds heavy.
Just drawing, you yeah. know. But they also have a storyboard course, which is really helpful and has been really helpful for me in my career after. But I was, my plan was to go back home, work for a year, and then do the third year.
Ah.
But, you know, I moved back home to Norway and worked in road construction for 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
and
cool.
I was just so sick of drawing.
Wow.
Because basically all we did was read comic books, draw superheroes, go out in the weekends, and, you know, it was just...
Or is what I call it, June.
Exactly. It was an amazing experience, the whole school, yeah. that cartoon school. And then
that, I'm sure the storyboarding helped you then direct.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was been a film buff since I was like a kid. Ever since I saw E.T. at 7 years old. Like,
oh, wow.
I just wanted to make movies and move to L.A.
Yeah,
exactly, because you want to be, if you're a 7-year-old kid, you want to be Elliot, right?
Sure.
You
want
to have a little alien friend.
Yeah. Rather than Drew.
Exactly.
But it's we wouldn't know, having been a little bit older than that when E.T. came out. Thanks for bringing that up.
But back to shooting the film, though, I just wanted to point out that the actors we have in this film, this cast, and to me as a director, it's pretty amazing that we were shooting 6 pages of script in one setup.
Oh.
And these actors just delivered.
Wow.
It was mind-blowing.
As opposed to doing 4 lines and then saying cut and moving
exactly.
the camera.
Yeah, like, but we were, you know, as an ensemble, they just really delivered.
Oh,
there is some...
Cool.
I think the most we did in one day was 12 pages of script.
That's TV work,
to.
My friend.
It is. It yeah. is. But it doesn't look like TV work when you see the film. That's
wow.
the beauty of it.
It's interesting because it's like a dance. And it's like choreography because obviously you've got such... little space to move, and it's all about a beat and a rhythm, and everyone kind of has a cue, and you sort of like, you just get it. It was amazing how it just all synced and worked, and everyone.
No, it was it's incredible, you know, just looking at these guys delivering 6 pages of script.
Yeah.
So Stig, so where is home now for you?
Oslo.
Oslo is still home. And do you have any intent, any desire to move away? Or is...
Oh, yeah, I want to work over here, definitely.
Oh, you would?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I just, I'm, you know, I'm curious, having known Dean now for so long, and of course he grew up in the blistery snow of northern Canada.
Yes.
And
oh, really?
When,
yes,
whenever I ask him...
Oslo, I think so.
Yeah, you know, whenever I ask him where he might... I mean, first of all, he's in a desert here in Los Angeles, but whenever I ask him... where he might want to move someday, it's always these hot, dry desert terrains.
Well, I grew up in north of Norway, above the Arctic Circle.
Oh.
So I had my fair share of cold winters.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
North of the Arctic
In
Circle.
The middle of summer, you had your fair share of
oh,
cold
yeah.
winters.
we had snow in the beginning of June.
I'm thinking
definitely.
Of that island that parties... what's the Norwegian... It's the northernmost town, but it's an island, isn't it?
Spitsbergen?
Spitsbergen.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
there last May.
You were?
It is. If you guys are going to go anywhere in Europe, go there. It's cold, it's crazy, but it's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Can we drop your name?
You could try. Might get kicked out.
That cartoonist?
Give these back to him.
So that's still happening as a party place, then?
It is, there's a lot of... I've never seen so much different cognac in one bar ever. I think they had one bottle from every brand in the world, basically. It was incredible.
And but do they still do the midnight sun, like you stay up around the clock drinking, basically? Yeah.
But it's
I know my bars.
The nature up there is mind-blowing.
Yeah, 24-hour drinking.
Yeah. England doesn't have 24-hour drinking.
It did for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they stopped, and we were just in London, and there was no bars after 2 that we could find, or 4.
Oh,
right, but that didn't
actually
stop the 24-hour drinking. Everybody was just doing it, skating it home in their own sick.
Somebody's apartment or something.
Somebody's apartment, yeah. That's
until they open again.
Exactly.
Now, it's time for another thing that you have in common with Tamina.
Oh,
of course. Perhaps Dean Haglund, most famous for playing a computer programmer, computer hacker, Langley, on 9 seasons of The X-Files and The Lone Gunman.
Perhaps.
Tamina got her start, I believe, as a computer programmer. Right? You were not
No.
Acting is something that you came to in a roundabout fashion.
That's right. Acting wasn't on the agenda. coming from a, you know, an Indian family, there was a lot of importance put on academic studies.
Right.
So anything to do with the arts was sort of frowned upon.
I see.
So, yeah, that's why I studied computer science, artificial intelligence, which I just was the best. I loved it.
Wow.
You know, kind of creating programs and sort of incorporated some business and marketing with it.
That's so cool.
See, yeah. I'm always fascinated when someone actually had a worthwhile career.
Yeah, exactly.
And then ends up here with us
right,
at the Annex Gallery, as if it's part of a work furlough program that
right,
she's on.
Exactly.
So how did that happen?
The actual education or the going into acting afterwards?
Yeah, I mean...
After I finished studying, after I got my degree, I went back and moved back to London, and I was working as a marketing executive.
Oh, you didn't get your degree in London?
No, I got it in a place called Leeds, at Leeds University.
Leeds, yes.
Yeah, which is lovely, great
lovely
to have. And I always knew that I wanted to study somewhere else because I'll end up going back to London because that's where I was from.
Right.
And so I stopped being a marketing executive, and then I tried to be a publicist, got a little bit bored of that, and I loved music. And while I was doing my writing songs, I needed to make some money, so I contacted an acting agent who represents people for commercials. And I was like, oh, I could do like a little bit of extra work or something to pay the bills.
Stand at the back.
And he just took a few weeks to persuade me that I should try acting, and I was just like, I don't think so. But I was like, no, come on, let's just try it. And I was like, okay. And from that, a couple of weeks after, I got Children of Men, and I was like, this is all right. I like this. Yeah, let's study this. This is great.
I love this. And this was one of the reasons that I was inspired to make this documentary with Dean, because I love the fact that his background is in improv comedy, in art history, in dance, and then almost just coincidentally... Here's this successful acting career.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting with two people where acting is the thing to fall back on.
Right.
As opposed to what most of us, you know, our parents are like, okay, pursue the art thing, fine. Please have something to fall back on.
It's also interesting as well that, you know, acting really is a mimic of what happens in life, and the best things that you can bring to the table are life experiences.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I never went to drama school, and maybe I wish I did. But I've done other things in life that I use as my experiences, and that's how I interpret different characters, because I try and put it, you know, when was I in my life in that place or that time or in this sort of view or circumstance.
Right. You bring a whole different set of elements that the kids who went through drama school probably can't bring.
Such as another thing that you have in common, both having worked with David Duchovny. In episode of Californication, played...
I played the bartender, and I kept my clothes on, which is great.
Because in real life, you're a bartender who keeps her clothes on.
That's right. That's right. There you go.
That's a very rare
That's
job,
the real man. Life experience. Real Actually, life. By the way, that is a rare talent. Actually, to be able to pull off both of those in this town?
Impossible. Wow. How is David? How was it working with him?
I really enjoyed working with him.
Yeah.
Very intense in terms of, you know, he gives everything.
Yes.
And so it was great to play with, because I love improvising, and he was all about that, so... Yeah, we just had fun and enjoyed, and it was very relaxing to work with. It wasn't, you know, I think it was one of the first shows that I did out here.
Oh, is that right?
So I was a little bit, before I went, and I was, oh my God, this is kind of good, because I love the X-Files, and, you know, I just watched it religiously, and I was like, wow, I get to work with this actor that I used to watch in England all the time.
All the time.
And it was like a... moment.
Yeah. And was he, did he, like, on the X-Files, he would always joke around in between takes, too, and have such a sense of humor.
He completely had a sense of humor, yes.
And that's still there.
Absolutely.
He's and not that, bittered.
Not at all.
I don't think I'll be on Californication, because I'm not a naked girl. Oh, wait.
You are a hot blonde, though, my friend.
Wait, I didn't know why I even set myself up for that. That was stupid.
I still remember at Dragon Con when you turned to me and you were stationed at Dragon Con between Tracy Lords and Claudia Christian, and you said to me, I am so grateful to not be a hot chick, because you go to these conventions and the energy that you attract. And while he's telling me why he's glad not to be a hot chick, a reporter from Maxim magazine comes up saying, we want to do a photo shoot with you. To him. Because he still got it.
I still got it.
Yes. That's
great. Hot chick, check.
So Stig, we, how do you... I'm assuming that Radio Pirates was in Norwegian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is not only your first... film here in America, but your first English language film.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And your first time working with actors who speak English as their primary language.
Yeah.
How do you prepare for something like that? Is there any special preparation?
I don't know.
Or
Well, forgive me, but I believe they teach English as a very young age in the
We do learn country. English from the third grade in Norway.
Third grade.
Yeah. But also, it also helped that once... and watch a lot of American films.
Well, this is what I'm getting at.
Oh, right. I see what you're getting at. But, I thought you were hacking on Scandinavian education.
No, he can clearly speak English fluently. I don't think that's...
I know.
Wow.
So now your statement's gone completely wrong.
No. We don't dub film in Norway.
You don't dub film in Norway?
No.
See what I'm getting at?
It's not like in Germany.
And they do in France, don't they, as
Yeah, France, but, yeah. Germany, and Italy. It's all dubbed.
Spain.
Yeah, it's all dubbed.
Yeah. Not in
not in Norway. See, I knew this from my distribution days, Dean Haglund.
Pretty smart people up there.
Yeah, exactly. They can handle
We have subtitles, though.
What?
Oh, yeah.
You have subtitles for what?
For all films, Norwegian subtitles on American films.
Yeah. Is that right? So they're in English, but they subtitle just in case you don't want to...
Yeah, for Norwegian subtitles.
So for those who don't want to listen to it in English, they can read it in Norwegian.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's very common in
I guess so.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't know
so now, working with Alain, your director of photography, a lot of times when I'm working with a DP, you know, we'll make references to, well, paintings and photographs, but also to, you know, shots from films, kind of that common language. Did you, with Alain, who I'm guessing is American? Is he?
No, he's French.
He's French.
Yeah.
Okay. So
isn't that amazing? Guy from Norway.
Guy from
DP
France.
DP from France. And actor from England.
From England, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's truly international.
That's a great thing about movies.
Yeah.
It's universal language. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
And could you then talk to your DP going, hey, man, remember that shot in, like...
They're all about the French films, you know.
So did you have to... So was he giving you French films to look at?
He gave me one called Elevated to the Gallows.
Elevated to the Gallows?
Sure.
Which is a... I can't remember the director. It's a pretty cool film, actually. Black and white.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty cool film.
And is it from
the very Hitchcock-inspired thing.
Well, it was Louis Malle.
Yeah.
Oh, Louis Malle.
That's the one, yeah.
Oh. So it's from the 60s, then?
1958.
From the French New Wave period.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Look at me go.
Impressive.
Yeah, I read a book.
Now, we talked a lot about, the style and the theme of the film and what we wanted it to look like. And we both love Hitchcock and Polanski and, Spielberg and all those, the masters, basically. But in the end, you agree on a certain look of the film, and then you just have to do it your own way.
Right, right.
And I think, you know, people talk about style, but the style will always be there, no matter who. If it's Werner Herzog, who says he doesn't have any style, but you can still tell it's a Herzog
it's
film.
Like a fingerprint. You can
But I think that's part of who's making the film.
Yeah. Well, it's like drawing. I mean, it's like cartooning. You could draw exactly like... any comic book.
Yeah.
But it'll always look like your Superman. It'll always be your superhero.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's, and you can't get away from it.
No, it's... But I think that instructing actors, talking to actors, it's probably more frustrating for them at times when my English isn't good enough.
Oh, is that right? There's certain words, the nuances...
Well, it is that you try to explain something, and then... I don't have that extremely broad vocabulary, but working with English and American actors really understanding and helpful, so they will... Oh, you're trying to... Ah, okay.
Right.
No, but it's pretty good, though.
Game of Charades.
Yeah.
Did you find that at all? Did you ever have like a part where it was like, lost?
No, the good thing, like, what I really appreciated was that communicating with Stig, who's very, very open about ideas, and even though we had, like, short spaces of time to film, there would be, like, a little congregation, and so... Everything was very clear about what was going to happen, how we wanted it done, and if anybody had their own kind of like
ideas,
or any concerns. And once that was done, we all knew where we were.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whereas some directors can be very sort of...
Yeah, well, we're not doing that.
Very
Thanks
strict.
For your help, but yeah,
exactly.
I'm directing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in the next take, here's what I want you to do. I want you to try acting. This is how we
convert. Don't bump into the furniture, learn your lines, and there you go.
What is happening with the film? How can people see Elevator?
And how did that screening at USC go?
Yeah, tell us about the big success at USC.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Everybody loved it?
No, so what are...
That George Lucas building is amazing. It is.
It really is.
That theater is...
Although it's now referred to as the house that Stig Svensson built.
I heard they were going to rename it, actually.
No, so what's the where do you go from here with Elevator?
No, we're going to try to sell it to a distributor here in the U.S.
Right.
And hopefully someone will pick it up.
So is it going to continue to be private screenings? Are there going to be festival appearances?
We had the screening at LA Film School.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully, I'm not sure if this is a festival film.
I see.
Really?
I'm not sure.
Is it so commercial or too dark?
I hope
or?
So. I don't know. It's...
I think it would depend on the festival, probably, and
yeah,
where.
We're trying to get into Toronto, and uh-huh. Hoping to get a screening there. But what I really want is to get like a release in the U.S. on the
right.
movie theaters. That would be like a dream come true for me. I think it's a good film, and I hopefully you, just someone who a distributor sees it and really loves it.
Yeah,
that's.
How can people contact you about the film? Is there a website for the movie?
There's a website. Elevator2011.com.
Elevator2011?
Yeah.
That sounds ominous.
I think that's the year.
Oh, right. Oh, good. I thought that was a flurry.
But you can probably also contact the producer, Mark Rosenberg.
Mark Rosenberg?
Yeah.
Where?
You want to give his address or
we
phone
open
number?
A phone book?
No, I'm joking.
Do we
know I'm joking.
Email?
No. We can post all these things.
We can post it on our website. Yeah. Don't even worry about it. Yeah. And of course, you have Shirley Knight's
nice
in this as well. So that would be good for promotion.
Shirley Knight is amazing.
Is she?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Academy. What was she nominated for?
Wasn't Rain People, Coppola?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And how was she to work with?
She was fantastic.
Yeah.
She is amazing.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
13 Days in a Box with Shirley
Knight?
She's
great. Her stories of Paul Newman.
Oh, right. I remember when Paul Newman said
absolutely.
She would do that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Lots and lots. So it was fantastic because she's had such an amazing career. I mean, her credits are longer than my arm.
Yeah,
huge. You know,
especially now that you've cut part of it off. So it was Sweet Bird of Youth, right, that she was nominated for? She's one of these actresses that I love, or actors that I love, that, you know, because stardom is such the product sometimes of luck, of being at the right place at the right time. But when someone like Shirley Knight, when you meet her, right, I mean, you're meeting someone who has worked constantly for 50 years, which means, wow, they know their stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
They're really good. And, of course, she's known by every generation, probably for you know, something different. Yeah. But, I mean, she's in, wasn't she in Paul Blart Mall Cop, which was this huge hit?
That's right.
So, like, even kids know who she is, right?
I did not see Paul Blart Mall Cop. I'm sorry, I missed it. I know it was the big comedy hit of 3 years ago that made hundreds of millions
of dollars. My point is, though, that's fine, because you're not 12. That's the nicest thing I've said to you, by the way, today on the show.
I know, it's true.
But so, you know, here's one of these performers that everyone knows. You know, the kids can be saying, "Oh, that's
That's the one.
She is an incredible actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you intimidated working with her?
You know, she's such a nice person that it is just a joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you cast her? Did you have breakfast with her and just hit
no,
it off?
No, we actually, how do you cast her? If Shirley Knight says yes, you better make sure she's on the film.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to say, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But did you just call her up or did you let
we,
go?
We talked about Shirley, and then maybe it was through her manager or her son or something like that. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
But we got to her phone number and got to talk to her, and she read the script, and she loved it, and I talked to her on the phone, and very sweet and very cool and just really understood the part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you love to hear those stories.
Yeah.
Well, I need two limos, and I need a bottle of Perrier in my trailer at any given time.
Yeah.
She wasn't doing any of that?
No.
She is not Dean Haglund.
Damn it. That's where I went wrong.
So who else is in the cast?
Yeah, who else is?
We've got, I know Joey Slotnick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now this is a guy, this is one of the, I love character actors, and this is one of those guys that people go, Joey Slotnick, who is, but if he was walking down the street, everyone would know, okay, that guy, who's that guy? And what, why am I creeped out by him?
he brought a class of his own in the movie. I mean, just what a great actor.
Yeah.
Just, on form all the time. Just, I don't know, I was really inspired by his work.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And was he playing, in his, was he a creepy guy?
He's a pretty obnoxious stand-up comedian.
Oh, is that right? An obnoxious stand-up comedian
with a heart.
In an elevator.
With a heart.
Yeah.
With a heart.
Yeah.
Those don't happen anymore.
No.
But dry, very dry.
Very dry.
Yeah, it was good humor.
Ah, fantastic.
The humor is pretty dark, though. It's very dark at heart, I would say.
In a true Scandinavian heart? That
Mark Rosenberg is pretty, he's got that cynical, humorous side to him, so it's pretty cool.
Oh, I love those bleak.
Yeah.
Cynical's great.
I love that. There's a whole Swedish comic book of bleak cartoons that I got when I was in Stockholm.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And it's just the darkest freaking... Oh, I love it. Can't get enough of it. And then who else? John Getz. Do we know John Getz?
Whatever John wants, John gets.
You say that all
that's
the time.
That's an old Stan Getz.
That's an old Stan Getz
line, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I think... Do I know John Getz? Was he?
He was in The Social Network. I mean, he's done so.
Blood Simple.
Blood Simple. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He played the lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lawyer to Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
In the
Fly too. Yeah, that's right. Fly.
He was in The Fly.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing: is that we actually know in real life the guy that he plays in The Social Network.
Oh, right.
Ixnay on the eel ray aimnay.
Awesome. Wow, that's hilarious. I didn't realize that. Wow, so you have this whole cast. Now, is there going to be a Norwegian screening? Are you taking it home?
No, we're not screening it.
What?
Yes. We actually have distribution in Scandinavia, Nordic territories for it. It's pre-sold on the script, based on the script. Yeah.
So it's already there theatrically.
No, we want to see what happens over here first, because you don't want to have. Basically, it's better to promote the film in Scandinavia if it's
already
in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah, it's you need that.
It's like a catch 22.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. And because sometimes that's also the problem if you sell off all your foreign rights,
then
nobody wants to buy in the U.S. because they're not going to make any money unless they can have the foreign territories as well.
Well, it was always that within international distribution, it was always that way that, you can raise some of the financing through pre-selling territories, though the deals you're going to get internationally are much better if it has high visibility in the U.S., which, of course, is the thing you're waiting to sell until you finish the movie.
Right, exactly. So, it's a full circle. Yeah. Now, does Norway have a state-run distribution company?
No, it used to have, but it's all private.
Now it's all private.
Yeah.
So they only fund the movie up front on the state side.
I guess it's like in Australia and I think to a certain degree.
Yeah, Canada has.
Yeah, and in England too, to a certain degree, I guess.
Yeah, and then are they like?
But you need if you're going to get state money in Norway, you need a distribution deal.
already in place?
Yes.
Before you even get state money?
Yeah. Because you're not going to get that money because they want that guarantee that the film is going to be distributed in the country.
Of course.
Which makes sense.
It totally makes sense. Yeah. It's a business thing.
Going back to your earlier film, Radio Pirates, is there any way that, I mean, I know it has distribution in Scandinavia, is there any way that people in other parts of the world can see it?
I'm not sure, actually.
You just stuffed it under the bed?
It was screened at a couple of festivals around the world, but I'm not sure if it's been sold to any countries. There's a pretty cool E.T. ripped shot in there.
Oh, is that right?
Remember Elliot biking in front of the moon?
Yeah.
I have a similar shot in there.
Did you?
Oh, so you're suggesting that people watch that scene over and over again and kind of just squint a little bit.
It's on YouTube, probably. Yeah,
you can imagine.
Yeah. No, it's. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Right, because after you've
done it's available.
You sold it off.
No, because I worked for a production company. And they,
I see.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess they own the rights for it and how they distribute it. I'm not sure.
Right, right. Yeah. And now that you made a film here... And in Oslo, what's the difference? What's the one difference in filmmaking between working here in Los Angeles and over there?
You know, I'm not sure. It's pretty...
The craft services are a lot less healthy.
Catering is better.
More red vines here.
Yeah.
I think that making films, if you make it in Norway or you make it in the U.S., it's in the end, it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And it's all about making the best film possible. Yeah. And I don't think it's that. I mean, you work with a lot of different people on every film you make. I mean, new DP or, different actors. And it's all an interesting journey. Mm. But it's basically the nuts and bolts of filmmaking is, I guess, the same all over the world.
Right. Yeah. So
you need your boom operator and you need your DP and you need, your production designer and
And craft services.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. It is.
Delicious catering.
But of course, what you have over here is that Hollywood magical aura.
Ah, the aura.
Which we don't have in Norway.
So, Tamina, what brought you here? I mean, after Children of Men, what brought you to L.A.? What brought you to the States?
A guy.
Partly, yeah.
Was it Dean Hagley? Another thing you have in common. No.
When I first started acting, I was really confused about the process and how to break down a script and all the nuts and bolts. And I found this really interesting book by Larry Moss called The Intent to Live.
Oh, yes.
Very good book.
Yes.
And so then it was my aim to come out and study
with Larry Moss.
With Larry and Michelle Danner at the Edgemar Center in Santa Monica.
Yep.
So I made it happen.
Oh, good.
And that's really what brought me out here.
Oh, good. Yeah. And did you get into class with Michelle right away?
I did.
Oh, excellent.
I did. I ended up being her assistant as well.
Oh, how handy. And then you did Larry's classes, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were intense.
Really intense.
Yeah, I did those just before I went up to Vancouver.
There you go. Another thing we got in
class. Another thing, really,
Larry
Moss class.
And we didn't know that.
Exactly.
What a wonderful story, though, because you do hear so many... stories, right, about, okay, I'm ready to make it. I'm going to go to either, New York or L.A. I'm ready to make it, right? I'm ready for that. Basically, what that says is
They're ready to give me
what I deserve right now. As opposed to, I'd really like to learn from that person.
Yeah.
Wow, or from that place, or from...
It's true.
Which I think is just such a more opening experience. Intent to have when you go somewhere. It opens. I'm going there to learn.
Yeah, I like being like a sponge.
Yeah.
And I every day I just love learning something new. I just love being fascinated.
Are you still taking classes with
them? I'm now studying with another teacher called Andrew McGarrigan.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm constantly, it's almost like going to a gym because you're using muscles and you want to keep those muscles strong.
And limber and flexible.
Exactly. So I believe in working out the muscles.
Awesome.
And do you take human growth hormone?
Not yet.
Everyone in the
I've just started on the protein shake, so that'll be the next thing.
And so what is the future?
What is singularity? Tell us, we haven't touched on this. What is singularity, Tamina?
So singularity is an epic adventure romantic feature film directed by Roland Joffé, wonderful French director.
Yes.
Just finished working with Neve Campbell and Josh Hartnett, filming in Australia and India, and it's a very interesting concept because it's a film where it's filmed in two different times. So you've got like 2010,
uh-huh.
and 2020,
okay.
And then you've got 17th century India.
Of course. Those two fit together.
Exactly. So I believe that he wrote it as well.
And, oh, really? Yeah. That's really cool. And when's that come out?
They are in post-production, so that'll be out in the beginning of 2012.
Wow. And that's going to be worldwide release kind of thing?
I believe so. I'm sure. I guess it'll be a matter of the whole distribution.
Right, right.
Scenario again.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now much like Dean Haglund,
who
has a production company called Rational Exuberance that produces your Chopac Hollywood Hour and produces such films as The Truth Is Out There. Tamina has a production company of her own.
Is that true? I do.
It's called And Cut Films.
And Cut.
Yeah, because every director always goes, And Cut.
Oh,
and
right.
So I was like, I hope no one's got this name, and no one does. And I was just like, I'm going to have that.
That's awesome.
And I just found that while I've been out here, you get to meet some really good writers, and I get to read such good material that I was like, you know, a couple of them I might just get hold of and start pushing them to other people and learning as I go along, because production is very, very different from being in front of the camera, but it's something that I would like to get more involved in.
I would think your computer science background will come in handy.
I think so, and the whole marketing and business aspect
and
too.
And your artificial intelligence, if I'm not mistaken, will also be something that you'll use.
Helps dealing with studio executives.
Exactly.
Whose intelligence is artificial.
Exactly. Doesn't exist.
And Stig, what's next for you? I mean, I know you are going to be pounding the pavement and fighting for Elevator to reach a wide audience. You must have some idea of what you would like to do next.
Yes, I'm working on a new film in Norway. It's called King's Bay. King's Bay is a coal mine on Spitsbergen.
Oh.
And there was this big... It's a conspiracy theory film. Yeah, exactly.
Oh!
Already.
That's very inspired by All the President's Men and JFK.
Ah. And it's based on a true story?
Based on a true story. What happened was in 62 in Norway, there was a big explosion in one of the coal mines up in Spitsbergen, in the Kings Bay coal mine.
Ah.
And 21 people got killed, and they have never found out what happened.
Ooh.
And this is during the Cold War, so there is a lot of...
Russian over...
Exactly. So once I started to do the research for this script, I think I found the explanation.
No.
Yes!
When is it set? When is the film set?
62?
The accident happened in 62, but it's...
set in modern day?
Yeah.
So there could be, for example, American podcasters who are coming in to investigate.
Definitely. The two podcasters. Yeah.
There's always
one of whom is
a casting session here.
A conspiracy expert.
And the other
makes witty bon mots.
Wow, we look forward to that. And when do you hope to get that?
Hopefully we'll start to shoot in November.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I'm also working with Mark on, we're trying to find out what we're going to do next.
Right. Cool.
And, we want to do a film with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Yay.
Get in line. Everybody does. Well, excellent. Well, thank you guys for coming to our show.
Thanks for having us.
Totally appreciate it. Of course, this ends our is this going to be our final? No, we got one more while you're on the road. You're technically not here.
Are you just admitting that this is pre-recorded?
Yeah, I did.
I thought we had done such a good job of...
No, you always blow it.
So I didn't blow it.
I know.
You just did it.
Now I'm going to blow it for you. You're back next week.
If only we could be allowed to edit.
No, we're not editing. We never edit.
No, next week, fabulous actor, comedian, and great guy, Gary Anthony Williams.
Yes, that's right.
On our 4th of July show.
Our 4th of July
we
show.
We celebrate Independence Day with Gary Anthony Williams, who introduced us to the downtown Independence. See
that's
what I did
right.
there?
See what you did?
You can find every installment of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour at chillpackhollywood.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K Hollywood.com. Download them, stream them, subscribe via iTunes.
Yes.
You can write us, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
Yahoo.
You can become a liker of
Please
the
like
show
us.
On Facebook, facebook.com/chillpackhollywood. You know, I just was listening to the show. I was just a month ago when I was editing that bonus anniversary show. I was listening to one show where we promised, we swore we would never, ever, ever be on Twitter. You are on Twitter,
I'm on Twitter.
At twitter.com/dhaglin. I'm twitter.com/PhilLairdus.
You guys on Twitter?
I'm not.
No? Stig?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter handle?
Follow
Stig Joran.
Stig U.
J-O-R-A-N.
Stig Joran.
What is
oh,
why?
Like that?
What
that's
is
my
dad's
middle,
middle name?
That's my middle name.
Yes.
Oh,
Stig
very
Joran.
Nice.
That's right.
So follow Stig, and
we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, I'm not Stigging to me.
No, not Stig. Not no. We'll
we
follow him
them.
On Twitter.
Yes,
but we'll
we
see
will.
our guest next week.
Oh, I see what
on
you're saying.
Chilpack Hollywood.
Okay. Goodbye, Dean Haglund.
Goodbye.
I miss you.
I miss you. Thanks, guys.